Blog Talk Radio.
Ever hear somebody say we can do this the easy way or we can do it the hard way? I mean, what kind of a choice is that? At Geico.com, everything's easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance. Easy to go paperless by automatically paying your bid online. Easy, easy, easy. So visit Geico.com today. Of course, if you prefer the hard way, I guess you'll have to go someplace else. Sorry, I just don't get it.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Speedway Show, an idea exchange empowering you to live well, live fully, and love deeply. And now, here's our host, Speedway Pierce.
Hi to all of you. My name is Speeway, and thank you for taking the time to join us for another episode of the Speeway Show, where we are talking about successful relationships, an idea exchange for a different kind of conversation about what makes relationships tick. Now, as you can tell by this introduction, we are talking about adult topics sometimes, so please exercise your discretion if you have young ears around. You can catch this or any other past show at any time by visiting the website blogtalkradio.com/speeway and scrolling down to the on-demand shows. Look for the launch of our own website, thespeedwayshow.com, which will be coming to you in the near future. If you would like to join us on Facebook, look for the fan page, The Speedway Show, at www.facebook.com/thespeedwayshow. You can also click on the like icon on Facebook to get updates and participate in discussions that we have from time to time. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter. You can search for the handle, The Speedway Show. You kind of get the theme, right? Now, if you'd also like to follow the show, in the meantime, you can click on the follow icon on the website at blogtalkradio.com/speeway, and you will receive future show updates. Now, the topic today is career versus relationship. Can they coexist, or do you have to forsake one in favor of the other if you're going to do them really, really well? To the successful person in what is hopefully a fulfilling career, at work you might be an executive, a leader, a counselor, a stakeholder, or a team member. You may also be a spouse, a partner, a parent, a sibling, a grandparent, a friend, and many other things to people outside of your work life. You may have an email and phone that you use at work. You may have one or more emails and phones for your personal use. And somewhere in there, you have to take the time to actually touch and spend quality time with the people who need, love, and depend on you. Where is the time? That is the question. And that's what we're going to talk about today. How do you make it work? Because we all have 24 hours in a day, so how do we do it? To shed some light on this question is my esteemed guest. Today, his name is Dr. Eric Winston Walton, a very busy executive who balances some amazing work and still manages to maintain a happy and healthy home life. Sounds impossible, doesn't it? Well, I can't tell you everything about him, but let me give you a flavor of who this man is. Dr. Eric Winston Walton is an accomplished commercial leader, strategist, happy father, and husband with three children, no less. During the past 20 years, Dr. Walton has built and led departmental strategy at some of the most notable global organizations. These corporations include GE, Merck, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Wyeth, and Cephalon. Dr. Walton earned his MBA in marketing from the University of Toledo and his doctorate in business strategy through the Smale College of Business at the Pennsylvania State University in State College, Pennsylvania. And he also earned a Bachelor of Science in Business from Central State University in Wilberforce, Ohio. Additionally, Dr. Walton received a corporate-funded marketing certificate from the Wharton School of Business in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He also serves on the board of directors for the National Biological and Pharmaceutical Association. Dr. Walton is the lead founder of the National Executive Forum, which can be found at www.nationalexec.org. This is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide C-level leadership development and a year-long partnership for executive business leaders. This phenomenal organization brings senior executive leaders together in an annual forum where an exclusively invited group convenes to learn, develop, and transform. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So it's interesting that I was trying to take a look at my CV to find out exactly who you were talking about, and I guess that is me.
Yeah, that's you. Yeah. You have accomplished a great deal over the years, and I can't wait to hear about how you juggle all of this. So, as a starting point, tell us a little bit about your family.
So, I think it all starts with picking the right person on the other end, and my queen, Shonda Mosley Walton. She's a senior manager at Amgen as well, and doing very well. Work with Amgen has a great future there. I have three children, Matthew, my eldest, my teen, Maya, my six-year-old, my little princess, and a new guy on the block, 18-month-old, Maxwell. So, needless to say, I have a lot on the plate from 14, 6, and 18 months poses a nice little challenge for our time, along with our careers and our aspirations.
Well, you have had a lot to juggle over the years, and I don't suppose it has been easy.
Let me tell you, I think that it has not. It has not been easy at all. And at the same time, I would say over the last, my wife and I are about to celebrate our 7th anniversary. Over the last 7 years, have been absolutely awesome, in large part because of really a clear understanding of what the priorities are, and making sure that we're making our relationship become the priority. And as much as we say that, Speedway, when kids start to come in, we have a teenager. Newborns coming, that's difficult to manage itself, along with the fact that we're trying to set a legacy for our children through our accomplishments. We all sit back and say, we want to be at this particular level in a corporation, build an organization, build a business. For me personally, I have those aspirations as well as my wife, Shonda. And so it poses a natural conflict from time. At the same time, the biggest rate limiter there is making sure that we communicate and we do spend the time, take the time out for each other. That's hugely, really kind of number one the objective that we have to make sure that we are able to accomplish.
Well, now you are involved in quite a lot of stuff even as we speak today. And, I went through your background and some of the things that you've accomplished academically and professionally. When you think about your day job today, how many day jobs do you have, and how do you manage them?
Let me tell you, interesting enough, and one of the things is I've just taken on a role, a faculty position at the Alabama State University as a professor, as associate professor of marketing, so a tenure track position there, where I get to now take that with the lessons I learned throughout my career and be able to condition, impart, inspire young minds. So that's another thing. So the question is, how do you handle that? And I think it changes day to day. I mean, you simply write down your priorities in terms of the day job. So there are two things. The National Executive Forum takes an enormous amount of time. It's like running a small business with about six or seven extraordinarily capable and energized individuals around you who also have other lives as well. So for me, it tends to fall a lot of the execution, a lot of the ensuring our excellence and being able to meet our objectives will fall on me. So that takes an enormous amount of time. For me, rolling in another role has to make sure that those two missions somehow overlap. So therefore, if I'm doing one thing, I'm learning about the other. So, you know, it's a challenge, I guess, but what keeps me fueled is probably the mission, the passion, and the what if this thing happens extraordinarily well, and every time I see it happening well, it refuels me for the next time. I'm speaking specifically about the National Executive Forum. My personal passion is being a coach and a teacher. So being able to go to a teaching university and research about my passion is a natural fit for me. Now, it does cause, I would say, you know, a natural time conflict. How do we do this, manage everything else, and continue to maintain our relationships with our family? And I don't just speak for myself. I really speak for folks around me who have been my mentors and some of my comrades. It's something that we really have to concentrate a lot on in order to not get at a breaking point and really lose getting to know the other person, or then pouring all of our time, passion, and energy into our kids once we get home, or dismissing the kids and trying to procure our way through our fatherhood. So it's a significant challenge, but those are the things that are on my plate currently.
Wow. So now let's kind of pick them off one at a time.
Okay.
When it comes to the National Executive Forum, either on a day-to-day or on a weekly basis, how much time do you find yourself spending, and where do you find the time? Is this what you do when you get home from work? How do you arrange your time so that you even have the availability to work on this, you know, what you, I think, aptly describe as a small business, because everybody knows who's ever tried to start a small business, it's not the same as going to work down the street for somebody else, because you have to be the organizer, the orchestrator, and the doer of so many things. So how do you, in a 24-hour day, how do you organize yourself so that you have the adequate time, or is it even adequate, to spend on it?
Yeah. I have to have National Executive Forum days, because I don't, you know, switching channels is something when you go deep into building the organization, making the context. I have to partition in my week, so I don't really look at it as a 24-hour day. I look at it as, like, you know, from Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays are going to be executive 50 days, National Executive Forum days, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But the week could change to the next week, and the priority may be putting together, for example, this week, putting together lesson plans and things of that nature, and putting together a complete plan for Alabama State University. But I have to participate in my days, because there's the marketing piece of it that I have to work with my strategist and refine the marketing strategy and be able to and contact people who are going to help fund that or either come to the meeting. So that's usually, and definitely that's usually a Monday. That's a Monday initiative. And then I have to, this obviously there's some follow-up calls possibly on Tuesday. But if I look at my seven-day week, I would have to partition a certain days that are dedicated to the many elements of the National Executive Forum. That's everything from sponsorship, marketing, registrations, and contacting all the administrative folks who are leading each particular charge, and up to including our community service piece. So it can be intense, and as you know, when we call, we call with a full load of questions and requests. So it can be extraordinarily time consuming, and then you have to balance that with understanding how to communicate with folks. So that's the way I lay out. That's what's been most successful for me over the last 3 weeks, because I had to rejuggle things as I've added on to my plate.
Now, with the National Executive Forum, there is some travel associated with that organization as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. We have to plan our strategic strategy meetings, and towards the back end of the year, we have to then put together our what I call our contact meetings, meeting with either organizations such as the National Sales Network or the National Black MBA Association, 100 Black Men, making sure we're in attendance at those events, as well as meeting some of the CEOs, like Adrian Barfield, who's down in Dallas, Texas, and he has created his own company, and now they've merged with Cardinal Health, and meeting with him about sponsorship and also his inputs on the strategy. So I'm currently we're meeting with what we call a group, one of our learning development organizations, because they put on our meetings in terms of our curriculum, our design, the development plans, the executive development plans. They put all that stuff together, but it also has to align with our mission and with the feedback from our membership. So it can get pretty intense.
So now there is a signature event that you have for the National Executive Forum, right? Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So this year in October, the 20th through the 22nd in Dallas, Texas, we host our National Executive Forum itself. And that is focused on bringing C-level and middle managers together to understand and their own personal leadership development, how they interact with others, and how they can make even a greater impact on their jobs, their personal lives, and their communities. And the way we put this thing together is to make sure that because everyone who comes could be a panelist. We have executive panels. We have a career networking day or a luncheon that folks can kind of sit there and talk with organizations and folks who have been around the talent acquisition world over the last couple years in particular because of the changes in the economy. And then we have our gala event and a lot of the social networking events around it. But the main seminal part of the program is the leadership development function that happens on that Friday and that Saturday up until noon.
And the perhaps one of the things that I find most astounding anyway is that the work that you're describing right now is all in addition to the work that you're doing in your professorship position at the University of Alabama.
Yeah, so Alabama State, so the good thing is that's cranking up. And before, we talk about partitioning time because before, 20 years beforehand, it was all about senior leadership in a commercial operation. So this is also something that's obviously going to take a significant amount of time outside of the lines, if you will, from a 9-to-5 standpoint.
Wow. So I'm going to play a clip. It's a very short clip, but I think it sort of epitomizes what a lot of people tend to think sometimes about the balance between the work and the relationship. Take a listen.
I don't think he can make it. He's got some work he has to do. Same with Carlos. That's the bad thing about being married to rich guys. The good thing, we're rich.
I heard that, and it was a clip from Desperate Housewives, and it just made me laugh because, you know, it was said in fun, but, you know, it does suggest that for a lot of us, you know, we feel like you can't do the relationship thing especially well and do the career thing especially well, so you end up with this trade-off. And what Gabby is kind of laughing about is the fact that, you know, on the one hand, you've got these two wives whose husbands are not able to join them for this evening function because they're working. And, you know, the good news from their perspective is, well, at least we're rich, even though, you know, they don't get to spend the time with their husbands that they would like. And this is sort of the crux of our whole conversation today. We are talking with Dr. Eric Winston Walton, founder of the National Executive Forum, www.nationalexec.org, and happily married father of three. So, Eric, here is the burning question for the day. How do you, with everything you just described for us, and I intentionally asked you about the National Executive Forum, because it really is a layer on top of your the teaching that you do, and it is also a layer on top of the relationships that you have at home with the family. So the burning question of the day is, how do you do everything that you do on the professional standpoint and still manage to maintain a successful relationship with your wife? What would you attribute your, what are the kinds of things that you think have helped you balance those two things?
I think, first of all, having a wonderful wife. I mean, I say that, and I know someone's saying, "Oh, right now," but really, no, really.
Oh, having, isn't that nice?
No, really, having a supportive, understanding individual, and having the yin and the yang approach going, for me, that's extraordinarily important, and I attribute a lot of that to her disposition. But you know, even one who has a perfect disposition has a limit, meaning that there is a time, we have two small children. My teenager is pretty self-sufficient. As long as we give him put a computer in front of his face, and he's good. He's good. Okay. The idea is that the trouble is getting it out in front of his face. But we have some emotional folks who are coming up around us that we have to also pour time into. And if I'm doing, for example, when I'm working with National Executive Forum and I'm doing some after-work phone calls and she walks in from work and she has the kids and she's just worked herself, there's a bit of a reaction to that.
Sure.
That I have to manage, that I'll have to manage. And it's in fun, it's in jest, but it's also in honesty. So what happens is, what I found to be significant is that you have to draw barriers. It's in large part about communication first. Like, if I have something that's going to take some time, that has to be predetermined and forecast ahead of time as much as I can. That tends to keep everything in balance. It's the other way with her. I mean, she'll come home and bring home work, and I'm like, okay, wow, you know, you're just at work all day, and I have the same concern. But if it's forecast, all of a sudden, and we know what to expect, and we know what to prepare. That's one thing about a very specific situation. But, go ahead.
So I was just going to say to you, you know, the concept of setting barriers is an interesting one, and I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on what you mean by that. Give us some examples of barriers that you might put around some of your activities.
Yeah. So everything. So you have to establish boundaries of when you are going to work and when you're not going to work. And that's something that you have to set the expectation of the people that your customers, in our case, and the people I'm working with. And, okay, if we're going to have a late-night teleconference, it's going to be on one day a week at this particular point in time, but we don't offend that principle. We set that principle out there, and everyone knows that expectation within the organization, but also at home as well, that on Thursday nights this is going to happen. And that allows the communication to go over. At work, if you're and going to the corporate side, you have to also. I think there's an extraordinary idea that you set boundaries even with your boss and your coworkers. These are some of the things. This is where I'm available. This is where I will commit some personal time to. But on these particular situations, these are my principles, and I will not offend my own principles. And I think you have to do that early on, because once you establish that you will overwork, you will continue to get, you know, you continue to allocate the precious time that you would have your family and your spouse to your job. So establishing those boundaries early, you know, in both places or all three places is extraordinarily important, and that speaks to the time and a lot involving the time. I can give one example. There's now Saturdays. It has to be something extraordinarily important, or the month before our event. I make sure that, you know, I've been living in Toledo, Ohio. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio. I live in Los Angeles. And in Toledo, Ohio, we don't have beaches in Toledo, Ohio. So I live in L.A. We have a beach. My daughter loves the beach. My son loves to play in the sand. Both of them. So we are going to do something on Saturdays together. The next principle boundary was, my wife and I are going to, at certain points in time, we're gonna kick them to the curb, and we're gonna just have our time ourselves. That's been the most difficult challenge, but we're kicking everyone to the curb because, and that's extraordinary for me. And her, she if she were on the line, she would say, you know what, we've had to do that, and we have not been extraordinarily good at it, for a while, and then we realize how necessary it is, and that added, you can tell it adds the reconnection back to your relationship.
Well, okay, so I was going to ask you if you schedule dates with your wife, and it sounds like you do. How often do you actually get to do that? Because I would imagine that, getting the whole, the complexity of finding childcare, or maybe your son does it for you. But how often do the two of you succeed in just getting away from the kids?
So we're getting better. Yeah, we're getting better at that. I can tell you, initially it was very few times, but we realized that we scheduled times. I would say, just in a nutshell, we try to do a once a week thing. Sometimes we get three times a week and 1 week nothing in. But in terms of setting a date, for example, we love to go to the Cheesecake Factory during the middle of the day. We'll have a lunch or a lunch plus time where we're either going to go to a movie. Okay, because that's easy. We got everyone's in daycare or school, so you don't have to get the babysitter to come in for that. But we like this. It's what we like. There are times that right before we had Maxwell, one of the names for my last son Maxwell, the impetus was the singer Maxwell. A lot of people have Miles and things. We like Maxwell because when we were dating, that was the music that we would play a lot, and it was very familiar to us. So my wife can sing like anyone. She's awesome. So we say, one thing, we know this one's going to probably have her voice. We just have claimed that. So what we would do is make sure that that the romance is a part of whatever we're doing.
Wow. So now, with regard to the kids, I'm going to play a clip that I, found was kind of funny. And it's this little boy who's trying really, really hard to impress a mom who's just not really paying a whole lot of attention to him. Take a listen.
Look, Mom, I drew a picture of me landing on the moon. And look, Mom, I made the prototype of the rocket out of macaroni. The real rocket based on the macaroni prototype.
So this clip, which I thought was really pretty funny, came out of it came from the show Despicable Me. And for those of you who have young children, you will undoubtedly have seen or perhaps know about this movie. But it's basically part of it that I thought was kind of unusual for a cartoon was that it goes back to this little boy's growing up, and he grows up into this, despicable character, ergo the name of the show. And it explains why he turned out to be this despicable character, because, he lived with his mom, and you hear what mom was like. So all the noise that you hear in the end where he says that he built the Rio bucket and after he builds the prototype, all that noise is the rocket blasting off and it goes off to the moon, and they both watch it shoot up, and mom's reaction is no different. And one of the things that parents, professional parents, struggle with is the concept of finding time not just for the spouse, but for the children. And it's not the same, which is what, Eric, I think you were alluding to earlier, that spending time with your children is not the same as spending time with your spouse, and it's great to do family stuff, but you still have to take time out to just go away with your wife and the two of you reconnect. Otherwise, you end up being one of those situations where two people have been married for decades and then the kids go away and then you realize you don't really know each other. So my next question for you is, given that you make time for just you and your wife, What does the time look like that you spend with your three children? Because obviously they're very different age groups. And part of what I wonder is, are you able to make individual time to spend with them, or do you spend just daddy-child time with the three of them? How do you manage that?
So let me tell you, your kids are like, you have to date your kids, okay? Everyone has their own time. And you can, I mean, family time is one thing. Usually there's some fussing going along when they're all together. But I found out, for me, having my oldest being 9 years old before the next one come along, his melting factor is different, meaning that Tim jiving into being one of the three, is in his mind, it's him and then those other two folks, okay? So there's time that I have to spend time, especially him as he is encroaching on manhood, just with him. I have to have Daddy Matthew time. Then I have a princess who I have to, who is going to look for me for approval and that whole cascade. So everything is surrounding a tea party with her, and it's real for her. For this little kid, is Princess Tiana, tea party, and I'm taking care of my little brother, who's really my little baby doll type of deal. So, but there's time that it's just her and I are run. So how I do that with my son is a little more complex. We have a daddy-son trip planned that we're just going to go somewhere, and just he and I. With my daughter, it's times that I get up and say, come on, Maya, let's go. And she's like, she's just putting her shoes on while asking where I'm going. She's like, let's go. And there's the time that her personality tends to change. She all of a sudden goes from 6 to like 16 in the car, and then when she gets back home with mommy and everybody, she turns back into being a baby again. And then there is a youngster who is it's a bonding time. That for some reason there's a difference in the male and female brain from the beginning. So therefore, his wants, and this little testosterone dude, he knows when it's just he and daddy, and he's only 18 months, and we're having our time together. So you have to have, I would say, you're dating your kids and taking time out with the kids and doing what they want to do. Is extraordinarily important into how you build a relationship going forth. Because your relationship, whether we realize it or not, it's going to be individual as they become adults. It's just very different.
Do you think part of that for you is, you know, in addition to the fact that they're such different ages, do you think part of that is also because they're different genders? Because as you're describing, particularly Matthew and Maya, it just strikes me that, you know, the time that you spend with them individually really must be different, because they're completely different personalities, completely different ages as well.
So, you know, families have complexities. I think that it's the genders is only one component of my particular situation, but my situation is not unlike other folks. So Matthew's obvious. If I've been married 7 years and Matthew's 14 years old, doing the math, there's another parent in there somewhere. So I think that from having his particular situation, being he and I only for a while, we have a little book that when it was just he and I, we remember the song by Will Smith, Just the Two of Us. We had the, because yeah. he wrote in a book to accompany that. So we remember we signed our names. So we felt it was just the two of us against the world. I always have to maintain that relationship with him. With Maya, she's the first girl, and there is a big gender component, but it's just Maya. Maya's sassy. There's some people who are not like that. She's Maya's sassy, and she's raised, you know, like differently. I mean, my reaction, my disciplinary process with her is very different. And then, you know, the little guy, you know, as he's developing himself. But I think that there's a gender component, but for my particular situation, is also another complexity there. And that also feeds into how I focus my time on Mrs. Walton, because, you know, being able to adopt those complexities is something very special in that.
So now, are there, when you carve out the time to spend, you know, sacred family time, and you build those boundaries, do you find, especially when you're traveling, Do you find that you are able to make up those times? Is there such a thing as making up that time? Or do you just roll with the punches and roll with the flow and you just pick it up when you get back home?
Just pick it up when I get back home. There's no making up of time. I don't bring gifts home because I've been gone or anything like that. But I do, because of the time away, make sure I balance the time that I'm having with my kids and with my wife specifically. You know, because you have to make the times your way an opportunity to think, regroup, and then get back focused into your family.
Well, you know, I find that when I travel, one of the things that I love about business travel, in part because I don't have to do it terribly often, and in part because I get to decide often when I travel, but one of the things that I like about it is it gives you time to think about things you normally would not have the time or the space to think about because you're so busy running around. And what you just said I find is interesting is that you're not just thinking about work. You're not just thinking about Alabama State. You're not just thinking about National Executive Forum, but it sounds like you're also thinking quite strategically about your family as well and how to manage that time better with them. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. I mean, let me tell you one thing about business travel. When you got three kids at home, there is an advantage that they're at home. So you get time to refresh, okay? And there is you feel guilty because you got some time away. And sometimes, you know, after the hotel room, and you can actually go to sleep when you go to sleep. But that's that. But I think that you think, you know, I'm almost, you know, I was obsessed with my kids, but you make sure that you're not getting. And so I'm thinking about them when I'm away, but I'm not. And it allows me to have fun when I get back. If you're there, I think one thing you're pointing out, you're managing the situation. I'm managing some diapers here. I'm managing some whining here. And I'm managing a computer at one point. But when I'm out, I can think about what should I do with Maya from a standpoint of getting her developed, her math skills developed, or taking advantage of her extreme math skills or her reading. What other things are going to enrich their lives, and we're going to be able to continue our bond?
Well, this sounds like you really have all of this stuff really well healed, well put together. And, you know, as a parent who has, you know, children and I'm doing the soccer thing, the karate thing, the swimming thing, and I'm doing the work thing, I know that it doesn't just sort of fall into place in a really simple way.
No,
so
not
part
at
of
all.
What I'm wondering for all those parents out there who are just, you know, particularly those who are really, really struggling with this and feeling like they're not doing anything particularly well. How did you arrive at the system of success that you have? Did this just sort of, did you just fall from the heavens knowing this? Or
you
was
know,
it something that you had to work at?
You know, let me tell you, one of the things that you have to have around you is a group of advisors, people who have done it before you, people who have made mistakes. One, I've had terrific parents. My father, you know, I had a father who was an icon. And a principal, a lot of his principles I enrolled into my principles of family. So the reason, my desire, my thirst for fatherhood comes from my father, Matthew Walton, who I named my son after. And my mom is the enterprising person, so she's continuing to set principles as well. So that's one thing. But having good friends around, having good conversations, asking questions because I don't know it all. But you can gain the knowledge and gain the insight. And also having a very good open conversation with your spouse allows you to understand things. So if the concern is mutual concern, you know, let's sit down and talk about what we see happening. And some of the, I mean, I'm a decent listener, and it's good to emulate. I have a friend, Dr. Kiernan Seth, postdoc out of Harvard. He's a senior marketing director at ESI. And he did the parent thing a little bit before me or different than I did because he knew a little bit more. His wife was really into the balance, work-life balance. Matter of fact, she's a coach. And I learned a lot from what they did and how he set priorities and how he set forth his boundaries. And so we sit and talk about it. So that's another thing, having folks around who also have children at work, people who seem to have some balance, gravitate, ask them questions. Oftentimes we try to figure it all out ourselves. And that's one of the things I had to make sure I didn't do, because I wanted to make sure that I eliminated as many, you know, potholes as possible.
Well, what have been the most difficult aspects of your work and life to balance? And do you ever have times when it just feels overwhelming?
Probably more overwhelming than not, because that's where we try to run away from. And I think that's also another impetus of making sure that you get balance and you recreate yourself continually. So the most difficult times, I think, that is when other life events happen. One thing, when we talk about marriage and relationships and romance, we almost devoid it of life around us. In 2007, my father went on to glory. And I had job shift happening at the same time. And that's when you know what's going on. That's when you know, one, who your co-pilot's like. What type? Do you have a co-pilot, or do you simply have a flight attendant sitting up there in the seat with you? So what happened? I realized,
what you gonna do?
Absolutely right. So if the plane's going up, or you have somebody who's going to help grab the reins, grab the controls, and push the right buttons in order to make sure that the ship doesn't go down. And so I'm saying that those are the most trying times. I always call it 2007 the most trying time. It let me know that my co-pilot could be the pilot if she has to be the pilot. And that was hugely, and it bonds the friendship, it also bonds the romance.
Oh, I was going to say, how do you manage the stress? In those times, you talk about, you know, the benefit of, you know, you've talked already about the fact that you got to start with the right spouse to start with.
Yeah.
And part of that then flows into the ability of that spouse to be the co-pilot when you hit those stressful times. But what other things do you do to handle that stress?
Well, let me tell you something. The big stress for me has been having a very spiritual connection with the Lord for me. That's one way that you start to, the faith becomes the where you dump your stress sometimes. Exercise. The way I handled it was sometimes me and Sorosco's chicken and waffles. Sometimes that's where some stress was handled. Go do something to get away, get out of the house. You know, go together. Those are some things in terms of handling the stress. I found that order relieves stress. So if you focus on what things are going kind of haywire, what are the steps to get us back in order? That allows you to understand what is really what's in front of you, and allows you to at least feel, have the perception of a less stress. But for me, from a spirituality piece, from an exercise piece, those are my avenues from stress, from managing the stress, and also sitting and talking it out. I highly recommend a counselor. I fortunately have friends who are counselors, but at the same time, I really highly recommend it. Everyone I know of affluence has someone to talk to who is outside of the situation. So I think that's extraordinarily underutilized, and I think that it's a situation that people need to enroll in some level of counseling, because it puts things in perspective. It's all about that ordering suggestion.
What kind of counseling would you get? Because, you know, I think most people understand the concept of counseling if you're having trouble in your marriage. Most people understand, you know, some people get the idea and the value of maybe counseling before you get married. But in the context of work-life career balance, what kind of counseling are you talking about?
So there's a couple kinds, and let me give you two quick ones real quick. One, I would invest in some type of executive coach. I have a very good coach, Charlie Carr, who is outstanding, because he not only touches on the component of what's going on from a professional skill set development piece, but what's going on internally within your spirituality and with your psyche. And he's been, for me, he's been a tremendous help. So therefore, some type of executive coach. There are different levels of executive coach. If you're in the middle management, if you're in entry, there's someone who can kind of talk and coach through the managing and balancing of work life, because that's probably the only person who's going to really care about that is your executive coach. The second type of counseling is getting a psychologist or a psychiatrist, someone who's going to be able to be a life coach with you, who is certified to do so, to manage things that may be more stressful than you anticipate. No matter what community, it's underutilized, and the evidence through the evidence is clear, the science is clear that stress, you know, does increase your or reduce your lifespan by increasing things in your body that shuts other things down. I don't want to get into the science of it, but it's very clear. So getting that type of help is extraordinarily important for the health of not only your health, but the health of your relationship as well.
Oh, very interesting.
If the guy from Sopranos can do it, so can I. Tony can do it.
So. Yes, Tony can do it. You can too. That's interesting. So now, in terms of on a day-to-day basis, you know, are there certain daily habits that you have that keep you balanced, that allow you to manage your stress, that you say, you know, every day I strive to do these things or this one thing to keep my equilibrium?
Absolutely. So one thing that you have to have your 15 minutes of preparation. It can turn to 30 minutes. I'm an early riser, so I try to rise before my family rises, go down to my office, and write, if I do nothing else, write down a list of three things I must accomplish today for it to be a successful day. And I know, you know, it's part and parcel to a lot of time management training, and specifically Stephen Covey, going in the Hiram Smith approach is really ordering and putting down a list. I keep it real simple. Let me put down these lists. If I knock these things out, today was successful. If I have to truncate them, now I have four things for the next day. But for some reason, that 15, 20 minutes becomes very spiritual. And I was watching Oprah Winfrey Network. Yeah, I'm one of the few guys who's going to admit that she's an icon. I'm watching it, okay? This legend, fellas, she is awesome. She sits down, and if Oprah can do it, believe me, I'm going to do it, okay? So she sits down, and she prays over her list, if you will, and meditates. And she takes a significant time into meditating. I think that, and from people I see as icons to me and who talk about meditation, you can see the difference, and that's something I'm going to embark upon even more this year. Those are some of my list of three for the year that I want to embark upon. But that whole meditation piece, sometimes you got to get to your peace, because you don't make a change until you get to your peace. You can't move without peace. You can't. Your family cannot be in order without peace. And your job as a husband is to put the structure together to allow peace, so that your co-pilot or pilot, whatever your philosophy is, my philosophy is a co-pilot, can run the show. Even though I shouldn't even say that, because no matter what happens, things don't happen unless she says they're going to happen. So, but what happens is in order to do that, you have to be able to create the peace, and that 15 minutes dedicating your time is extraordinary important. To by days that go well, I do that. The days that don't go as well, they're haywire. I didn't do it.
You know, I have got to attest to the wisdom of that, because you know what I started doing a couple of years ago is I did get into meditation, and what I find is that I try to set aside 15 to 30 minutes twice a day. And just as you said, I find that when I am on schedule and I am disciplined, it doesn't matter what the day brings, because you are centered. And when my meditation is off, I go to work and I go about my day, and the slightest thing just feels like it just throws everything off because I'm not centered. So I have to say, I completely agree, and I find that the people who are most successful, the people who you would look at, like the Oprahs of the world, whose lives seem to be so full, and you wonder how they get done the things they do in 24 hours, many, a great number of them, have some form of meditation or something that they do to just get away and introspect, which gets me to the question, you know, one of the things about this show that sets it apart, or hopefully sets it apart, is the concept of using the life manual as the guidepost, and whether that's a Bible, whether that's a Bhagavad Gita, whether that's a Quran, because a lot of times, you know, truth is the same. So my question to you is, do you, it sounds like you use a life manual, and what is it, and what is the strength, if any, that you draw from it?
Well, the wisdom of Paul, the wisdom of Abraham, come from my life manual being the Bible, and a lot of that, that's the foundation for me, and a lot of that, part and parcel, because that's what my dad would tie his principles that he, of manhood, that he would talk to me about, and then I could really see it happening. It's interesting, my father never talked about himself as being perfect. He talked about himself as learning lessons, and now he, at the end of his life, he has significant peace. So my life manual is the Holy Bible, and other books that associate themselves with a Christian based philosophy. I think that answers your question. Sure.
Yes, it does. The other thing I was going to ask you is, you've given us some really good suggestions for things that you do and habits that you have that allow you to create that balance, and it may not always be perfect, but you know, sounds like it's working pretty well. Are there other critical success factors that you have found that you would want to share in trying to maintain not just a healthy but a solid marriage when you're also balancing a career and you're also building those relationships with your kids?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have about, I would say, five, and a couple of them we talked about. One, getting some type of coaching, getting some help, getting some other guidance. But you know, one of the things that, you know, I really strongly advise is getting a financial planner or someone with great financial knowledge to help you create a strategy. And it's tricky because a friend of mine, Mercy Morganfield, talked about it's difficult to get a banker to ask you how to handle your money because their ass is going to be put in my bank. So
yeah.
You know, you have to sit down, and it's going to be hard work, but you have to grab some books. There's a book called Stop Acting Rich and Start to Live Like a True Millionaire by, I think it's Dr. Thomas Stanley, who wrote The Millionaire Next Door. And it allows you to understand finance. There's a guy, obviously Robert Kiyosaki, I think, if I'm saying his name right. But you have to sit down and read some things and sit down together and put together a financial plan. I almost say, you know what, get a financial planner for insight, but the plan comes from the two of you. Because if money is the reason why a lot of folks have issues, if you have a plan or a doctrine or some commitment to what you want to do and what you want to be when you grow up, and there's some vision there, because the vision has to come out of your financial plan, everything pours into how you're going to take care of your kids and your grandkids, right? So that's a huge piece of it, and one that takes a lot of stress out of your relationship. So it starts to answer a lot of questions. Why do you want to do this? What does this really mean? What's extraordinarily important to you? And then how are you going to go forth? Number one, making sure that you have a spiritual doctrine as well, understanding that you guys you're not just connected physically and mentally, you're connected spiritually. So therefore, making sure that there is a conduit for to continue to enrich and support that spirituality, i.e., you go into the same church.
You're talking about between you and your children and your wife.
Exactly. So what I always go is between the husband and wife, and everything else is a subset of that. So when you guys are on the same page, they pick it up, because children are not looking at what you say, they're looking at what you do. So once you're on the same page, that continues the romance in the relationship, and that allows understanding for imperfection.
Okay.
Organizations like, you know, we talk about at the National Executive Forum, the impetus of the National Executive Forum, that I would go to Wharton programs and friends of mine would go to Harvard programs and we could learn great skill sets. What if we could learn great skill sets and competencies and then understand how, you know, how do you balance life in that same session, and then how do you understand cultural challenges as well? That's what the National Executive Forum is focused on. So organizations, you know, coming, obviously, we love you to come to our organization as a senior leader, but there are other organizations that offer similar similar training, so you can have those types of discussions. Some church groups are very business-oriented, so they have a retreat that talks about business, creating a business and also keeping your spirituality together. So organizations like that, join something that supports what you're all about. I think that, you know, we talked about scheduling time. Time management is extraordinarily important. You know, schedule the dates. Let me tell you, the other, there are all kinds of dates, right? So the strange thing is you got to schedule all the dates. So you need to make sure, you know, and then we'll keep it clean. But you truly do have to work on scheduling all the dates. That's the difference between being adults versus being college kids who are dating. It's just the reality. And you can make that sexy as well.
Wow. So now, what do you say to, you know, you certainly covered the person who might say, boy, you have no idea how busy I am because, you know, that's your life right now. But what do you say to the man or the woman out there who says, but I'm already in the doghouse, I've blown it. My wife is mad at me. I don't spend time with her. She's mad about the long hours. My kids don't know my name. What do you say
right.
to those?
Let me tell you, that was great, because I was thinking I had forgotten something, and that's a perfect transition to what I was thinking. So, you know, currently I'm traveling right now. And when I get home, there's a doghouse waiting for me automatically, even if she don't want me to put me into the doghouse. My wife is a sweetheart. But the reality, there are triggers to that doghouse if you don't do. Like, I have to go and grab all the kids and give her personal time. So if you're already in the doghouse, you need to take these kids, send her somewhere. I have this thing that I send my wife. I organize one and started the organization of the second one, of the girls' trip. Okay, send her on the girls' trip. You'll be out of the doghouse quickly. But the reality is, make sure you're promoting, from a male standpoint, make sure you're promoting that quote-unquote personal time. Sending her off to get her nails done and her hair done, and see, my wife is one that says, "Oh, I'll do it later. Don't worry. No, I'm dropping you off." After that, you know, that she turns it back. It's kind of like that Snickers commercial. They're the different person, but once you create those particular environments and events, the men I saw have success, when I learned from, would make sure they did those types of things with no complaints, and you proactively do it, it tends to ease the doghouse. At least it gets you closer back to the main house.
Oh, funny. Well, Eric, thank you. We could talk all day about this topic, but this brings us to the end of our hour. Thank you for joining us on the Steeway Show today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And to our listeners out there, I have to say that I did go to a National Executive Forum, my first one last year, and it was absolutely phenomenal for all the reasons that Eric has discussed. So I truly do echo that whole concept of find that organization that speaks to you and reflects what you are about and gives you time just for yourself to go and rejuvenate and think about your success, your well-rounded success as a professional, as a person who has a three-dimensional life. And with that, we are at the end of our show. If you'd like to follow the show, of course, you can follow it on blogtalkradio.com/Speeway. You can join us on Facebook. Tell us what you thought of the show. Post a message on the Facebook fan page, The Speeway Show, or send me a tweet at my handle, Speeway Pierce. My handle's changed. It's not Speeway Pierce. It is The Speeway Show. And everyday people, everyday lives. You don't have to be a celebrity to be a guest on our show, because all of us have everyday joys and challenges in our relationships. If you would like to be a guest, send me a note from the Facebook fan page, The Speedway Show. Join us next week for another edition of our show. And until next week, this is Speedway saying go in peace and serve the world.
Thank you for joining us on The Speedway Show. Until next time, live well, live fully, and love deeply.